It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the show. I am Kim Monson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Monson, MONSON.com. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. We would greatly appreciate that as well. We've got a very important show planned again for you today. We'll go through some headlines, this first and second segment. The third and fourth segment, we'll be talking with Daniel Greenfield, and he is a Showman's Journalism Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center, and he also writes for Front Page Magazine, its blog, The Point, and his own blog, Sultan Knish. And he had written a piece, very interesting. He says, we're not all in this together. And so you won't want to miss that in the third and fourth segments. At the end of the show, we always talk about thinking great thoughts and you know, listening to beautiful music. And one of my partners, Tom Petrie, had mentioned that down at the Denver Art Museum, there is a beautiful exhibit right now. It's Winslow Homer and Frederick Remington. And would highly recommend, just as a respite from all that stuff that's going on out there, you might consider just going down to the Denver Art Museum and taking a look at that. As we look at these issues, my friends, the best way to put on your thinking caps is in critical thinking is to ask these questions that Rudyard Kipling has mentioned, and that is you ask what and why and when and how and where and who. And we use that as we're looking at these different issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. We are Americans. We're freedom-loving people. We have seen these, our liberties have just really been eroded over the last 3 months with the whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption. It has been astonishing to see what has happened to our liberty, which liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom. And so we are looking at these important issues. Hopefully we're helping you get your brains around that. I always like to say thank you to the great people that I get to work with, those folks here at Crawford Broadcasting, as well as this team, Steve, Patty, Zach, Keith, and Charlie. And you listeners, each of you, you're treasured, you're valued, you have a purpose today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. So, producer Steve, how are you doing this morning?
Kim, the coffee machine's busted. How are we supposed to do a show at this time of day without coffee?
That's a very good point. So you're a little cranky, huh?
It's not so much cranky as like here I sit on the 12th floor of this building looking to the west, and I can't keep my eyes open or can't get them open.
Well, you have to for the next hour, okay?
All right.
Okay, let's jump in here with our quotes. And the gentleman who I chose today was Dean Alphonse. He was an American politician who held nominations and appointments from a number of parties, including the Democrat Party, the Republican Party, the American Labor Party, and the Liberal Party of New York, of which he was a founding member. Born in the Ottoman Empire to two native Greek parents, Alphonse remained involved in Greek-American organizations for much of his life, as well as an activist in Zionist groups. He was born in 1897. He died in 1989. And this is what he said. He said, I do not choose to be a common man. It is my right to be uncommon if I can. I seek opportunity, not security. I do not wish to be a kept citizen, humbled and dulled by having the state look after me. I want to take the calculated risk to dream and to build, to fail and to succeed. It is my heritage to think and act for myself, enjoy the benefit of my creations, and to face the world boldly and say, this I have done. Steve, that's a whole show probably almost in that quote.
It is. We could probably, well, at least the number one story on your mind, but we could probably go through the entire thing that the package that Patty sends over and apply that quote to each one of them.
We really could.
And so there's your segue into this story that's most heavily on your heart.
Into what is going on. And many of you may know that yesterday there was a special meeting by the Tri-County Health Department. And they voted, this is from KDVR, they voted to mandate face masks in Adams, Arapahoe, and Douglas counties, with locations having an opt-out option for any municipality. Board members voted 5-4 for the face covering option after Health Department Executive Director John Douglas presented data showing COVID-19 cases are on the rise in all three counties, especially in Aurora and in Adams County. Arapahoe and Douglas counties' cases are also rising, but at lower rates. Let's just stop right there, first of all. When this whole thing first started, it was we needed to flatten the curve. You know, and people said, okay, you know, this, we're not sure what's going on out there. Okay, we do want to flatten the curve. We do not want to overwhelm our hospitals. That was what we were told that we needed to do. Now we have more testing. And as we have more testing, we're going to have more cases. My friends, can you see how they are using the more testing and the more cases to then actually use their power to once again tap down everyday people's liberties? Now, we've looked at so much data on these quote-unquote face coverings, these masks. Putting a scarf over your face does not prevent the COVID-19 particle from getting through those particular surfaces, because the particle is so small. So this is really not about keeping people safe. This is about control. And one of the things that a face covering can do is if someone coughs, it could certainly capture, you know, those bigger droplets. And if that's something that somebody is concerned about, then if they have a face covering over their face, that should take care of it. I would recommend people to be responsible, to be careful not to cough on others, but they are using this particular data to once again shut down, in a way, our freedoms. And the other thing, Steve, I find totally kind of amazing is for 90 days. I mean, that gets us into the school year. What are we doing to these children that are not seeing any facial expression from others? I feel that there's something really cruel about this, Steve.
Well, okay, my opinion is worth almost nothing. But I have been saying from the get-go, the mask is a psychological tool to put in people's minds that, hey, there's something really heavy going on here. I need to kowtow to the government agencies. You know, the mask or the highway sign, what does it say? Wear a mask, save a life. All these things are contributors to this, let's put the reins on this, you know, on this population. So, and you know, the other thing I keep coming up with, we can look at this year right now through one of two lenses. One lens is the one we're currently seeing. We have the virus. We have all the civil unrest. And it is an election year. But what would this year look like if it was not an election year? That is always on my mind.
Well, I think that actually if this was not an election year with Donald Trump, that we would not see all of this. I don't think we'd be happening. And how is it that the rioters that actually were tearing up our downtown Denver, were defacing property, why weren't they hauled in for not wearing masks? So the insidious component of this, Steve, is this is going to now make our businesses be the basically the enforcement on this mandate from Tri-County Health. And how that's going to work is Tri-County Health, I'd actually gotten somebody had sent me something. This was, I bet it was 6 weeks ago, that Tri-County Health was actually looking for volunteers to go and sit in parking lots and monitor how many people went into different businesses that we're wearing masks and that we're not. Does this not sound a little Marxist to you, Steve? Spying on your neighbor, counting that? But yet, were they down there counting the number of protesters that were defacing property without masks and how close they were standing? I mean, that's the real question. The double standard that we have going on here is it means that either it's not true, this narrative, or it doesn't really matter like they say it does, Steve.
Was it de Blasio, mayor of New York City, or Cuomo, the governor of New York State? One of them, or maybe even both of them, in one of their many public statements, were saying that, well, you know, if we have to snitch on one another, I guess that's okay.
And it, once again, you know, having people, that you know, they call them Corona Karens, that are going by and, you know, tattling on other people. But to continue with this, I want to connect another dot for you. And actually, I think what we'll do is we're going to go to break because I've got another very important connection that you all need to make. And once again, Patty is just amazing at putting together all of this research. And then we always have a lot of conversations with you, Steve, as well, of working to connect these dots. But before we do that, we're going to go to break. And the insidious component of this is making sure that our businesses who want to be open, that that they are abiding by all the rules. And I had a conversation with a number of people yesterday. They said, you know, we want to support our businesses, but yet where do we stop as far as we want to support our businesses? Okay, we're going to wear a mask. But then what's the next thing? Where do we put our line in the sand on this? And that is what is so insidious about this. But at this point, I did want to let you know that Hooters Restaurants, they're taking all kinds of precautions right now. They have social distancing. Their team members are wearing masks, have temperatures taken. They're doing all the things that they're being asked to do. And certainly, I would recommend to just go out and sit on the patio. And they have specials every day, 3 to 6 happy hour specials. And, you know, just meet some friends and just sit out there, enjoy some beverages, some great food, and patronize one of my great partners, and that's Hooters Restaurants. And you can get more information at order.hooters.com. That's order.hooters.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to connect some more dots for you. Stay tuned.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. We have all of the highlights of our upcoming guests, as well as our podcast that we bring out that each week and op-eds. So be sure and sign up for that. As we were coming out of break, you heard a quick soundbite regarding I'm a Trumpster Radio. And this is Reggie Carr and Johnny Thomas. And they have a great program on Sunday afternoons, 4 to 5 p.m., right here on KLZ 560. And as you know, they are working diligently to put together this bus tour to take this great bus, the I'm a Trumpster bus, into minority neighborhoods and also swing neighborhoods to get people registered to vote, to talk about what Donald Trump is actually doing for our ethnic communities. And we're helping to raise the money to wrap the bus. They have funded this 98% with their own money. And my friends, we have to step up and help as well. And so many of you have. Thank you so much. We had initially thought that we were going to have our party with the bus early in July. It looks like it's going to be late in July. We've had a little glitches on a couple of things. But we would greatly appreciate it if you would go to I'm a Trumpster, imatrumpster.com, and contribute. And then email me at kim@kimmunson.com to let me know. For every $50 that you contribute, you get one of their very cool battle masks. And once we get this party date nailed down and location, we'll be announcing that as well. But these guys are true patriots. And I heard something very encouraging yesterday, that the support for President Trump in the Black community is at all-time high, Steve.
I've been seeing so much data, you know, coming across the multiple sources, maybe too many sources, but yes, I'm seeing some uplifting things as well.
And that's why it's going to get more and more interesting out there. But I want to go back to this piece on KDVR that Tri-County Health yesterday approves a mask requirement. Okay, first thing, it was a 5-4 vote. And so it was, there were four board members who said they did not think that that was a great idea. But this is not elected people. These are people that are appointed by our county commissioners. And then that board hires the executive director, Dr. John Douglas, and then they give him direction. Okay. So ultimately, this goes back to our county commissioners are the ones who should be held accountable for these particular mandates and dictates. Now, health board member Julie Mullica made the motion for the mandate. She said, I'm in favor of a public mandate with possible opt-out option for some locations. And we mentioned the order will expire 90 days after it's implemented unless extended by the executive director. Before the vote, the executive director presented data showing states that mandate face masks are slowing the rise in cases without hurting the economy. Okay, I'd like to see that data. That would be one of the first things. My understanding, I talked with someone that was on that call yesterday, and they were not there for the whole meeting, but my understanding, there was no public comment or very limited public comment that was taken regarding this particular issue. And I'm actually really disappointed that Aurora's Mayor Mike Kaufman is supporting required face coverings in public. You know, our soldiers have gone to war for our liberty. And one of the things of mandating something like this is I would say that probably the Patriots at Bunker Hill, the soldiers at Gettysburg, those storming the beaches at Normandy, they might be a little embarrassed about what's happening here on this. But another dot that I want to connect is Julie Mullica, my understanding, is the wife of Kyle Mullica, who is a Colorado State Representative. And Kyle Mullica has been the representative behind pushing forward all of this forced vaccination legislation here in Colorado. So connect a dot. So today maybe it's face coverings. Tomorrow it might be a vaccination that you may not be comfortable getting. And yet you might not be able to go to businesses if you don't, quote unquote, have that. But the other dot to connect here is you may remember that we had Steve Ryder on the show, whose wife, Elizabeth, at the age of 40, died after 20 days in the hospital. And Steve, nor his children, nor her mother were allowed to come and visit her at the hospital. So Tim Geithner, Representative Tim Geithner, at the very end of the session, put forward House Bill, I think it was 1425, and it basically was that no one should die alone. Now, it got watered down significantly, and it was to hold the hospital somewhat accountable if somebody died alone, if their family, if they were not allowed to have a family member there. But the intent was that no one should die alone. Steve, 17 different Colorado representatives voted no on that. And so one of those people was Julie Mullica's husband. Julie Mullica is on the board of directors for Tri-County Health. Her husband is pushing forward forced vaccinations. He voted no and basically said, you know, that he supported people dying alone. I just wanted to connect that dot because I think that's really important, Steve.
It's a dot well connected, because have we become so calloused that he can't even put himself in those people's place?
I know.
A woman, 20, 21 days in the hospital, no contact with any family. And what
By Facebook, you don't know.
Yeah,
that. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But I'm talking about, you know, in person. And what makes that story so telling is Steve's account of that about approximate 24-hour period of all the absurdities. Besides his wife departing this earth, the absurdities that he ran into in the hospital, going to different places and seeing staff wearing masks, not wearing masks, you know, it was just nuts.
He said that when he then went into see Elizabeth's body, he did not have to put a mask on. And he said half the healthcare workers on that floor did not have on masks. So we're trying to connect this dot that, do you really care about people? Because if you do, then you would care about people dying alone. And so I just wanted to make sure that you all understood that.
Well, and then the slippery slope, you said, well, today it's a mask. Tomorrow could be a vaccine. How about the day where it's a chip on the back of your wrist?
Used to think we were tin hat crazy when we even mentioned that. and now it's coming to reality, you know, at morph speed. One other thing, we've got just a few minutes before we get to Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. But this, again, is from KDVR. And Governor Polis announced last week that he is naming a geographic advisory board, a geographic naming advisory board. So what's going to be happening here is anybody that is not, quote unquote, perfect in their past, we're going to see probably a movement to try to get some of the names changed, I bet, for some of our mountains. We certainly, down at the State House, the statue to the Union soldier was taken down. And Governor Polis actually expressed some outrage. But yet, we talked about it yesterday, the doublespeak on who he was trying to imply did that and who actually did who did that were two different things. And so I find this very interesting. The board could have up to 15 members. And, of course, this is by executive order. Governor Polis has done over 100 executive orders during this COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption. And so we see this grab of power of what we can do and cannot do. And we're seeing unelected people that are making these decisions about which businesses, you know, what they have to do. And if they don't jump through these hoops, then they're going to be fined and they're going to have their licenses threatened. And then we see, again, instead of consulting with the legislature, which, you know, are our elected representatives, Governor Polis is doing so many different things by executive order. My friends, we are in a very dangerous time in America. Steve, your thought? I know that Jason's calling in here. So
you said, Steve, my thought, there goes the phone. let's see. What was I thinking? Oh, add to all that the cost. Everything that guy comes up with is the added cost of government. Those 15 board members, are they doing that for free?
Well, and then all the people that have to provide the reports for them. Uh-huh. So it's like a jobs program. So
you already touched base on it. The first couple geographic sites on the chopping block are Mount Evans. I'd have to research that. Redskin Mountain and Squaw Mountain. So, hey.
Oh, so do we have Jason on the line with all this going on here?
We do.
Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. Top of the morning to you.
Hey, good morning to you, too. It's funny, you're talking about the wearing of masks or not wearing of masks. There was an interesting video I saw yesterday of Dr. Anthony Fauci from just a few days ago, where they were filming something or other, and he had his mask on, and as soon as he thought the camera had stopped rolling, he took his mask off and just was wearing it down under his chin and walking around very, very casually. So I guess he's got to keep it on when the cameras are rolling, but when they're not rolling or he doesn't think they are, maybe not so much.
Well, and Jason, that's what the big hypocrisy is if in fact this narrative that they're pushing was true, then they would have that mask on all the time. So either it's not true or it doesn't matter. But either way, I think it's important that we've got to, I can't quite figure out how to push back on this because I want to support our businesses, but I'm trying to figure out what to do about this.
Well, it's a tough one. And, you know, my feeling is if people were really afraid that this was so deadly and that they were going to go out and catch this thing and you know, drop dead because of it, if I was fearful that something like that was floating around in the air, Kim, I wouldn't go out and trust a little piece of cloth, even if someone did have it on their face to protect me from such a horrible doom.
Well, you know, and that's an excellent, excellent point. So we've got to continue to shed light on this. We certainly want to support our businesses, but we have got to push back on this weaponizing, I feel, of these health departments against our everyday people. So speaking of everyday people, though, creating wealth, that is something that is so unique about the American idea that we have a middle class where people can save and invest. That's what you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management do. So what's going on? I know we're going to have earnings coming out. What's everything looking like right now?
Well, we'll see. The market had a decent bounce yesterday, got back about half what it lost the day before. The futures this morning look fairly boring. Now, Kim, one way to build wealth is to not pay as much taxes.
You think?
That's for sure. Right. And one way to pay less taxes is to not have income hit your 1040 that you don't need. So the CARES Act got an update recently where if you have already taken your required minimum distribution for this year, you're allowed to roll it back into your IRA all the way up until the end of August. So if you only took that required distribution because the IRS forced you to before they waived it for the year, well, it might be a good idea to roll it back in and not have that income hit your tax return for the year. Now, look, I think if you're going to be in an abnormally low bracket this year anyway, maybe corona-related or not, you know, maybe it's best to go ahead and take the RMD and get while the getting's good, so to speak. Everybody's situation's different, but boy, when they give you an opportunity for more choice, I think you should always study which way makes better sense for you and take advantage of it, that's for sure.
And that's what you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management can help people do. And so I'd recommend people give you a call, 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. And we've got this great landing page together as well, Jason. That's AIR, A-I-R, presidential.com, airpresidential.com. I'd recommend that people can they can reach you that way as well.
That's right, Kim, and they can also download info on this CARES Act update there and learn more for themselves.
Okay, and that's airpresidential.com. Jason McBride, we'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Have a great show, Kim.
Thanks so much, and we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk with Daniel Greenfield. He is with the David Horowitz Freedom Center. You won't want to miss it. He says we're not all in this together.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. We'd really appreciate that as well. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Daniel Greenfield. He is the Shulman Journalism Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He writes for Front Page Magazine, its blog, The Point, and his own blog, Sultan, is it Knish? How do I say that, Daniel?
That's exactly right, Knish.
Okay. Well, Daniel Greenfield, you've written a really interesting piece a few weeks ago that you said, we're not all in this together. Why would you say that?
No, we're absolutely not all in this together, even though that's a very popular slogan. Now, you know, it goes without saying that some of the celebrities are not in this together, but the very same politicians, the state governors have been endlessly lecturing us about this, are not all in this together. We've caught them fairly blatantly violating the rules on their own behalf. Governor of New Mexico sent out for jewelry. The governor of Illinois, Governor Pritzker, has been particularly obnoxious about this. His family has been touring his horse estates in different states, and he's building a new massive mansion for himself. And very obviously, the key decision makers, particularly, for example, the Secretary of Health for Pennsylvania, who was one of the part of the health administrations in different states who ordered coronavirus patients to go into nursing homes, which helped account for a lot of the coronavirus death, though. He very much made sure to pull his own mother out of a nursing facility. So life for them and life for us is quite different. The mayor of Chicago shut down barber salons, but made sure to be able to get her own haircut. And when you look at a lot of the politicians back when barber shops and salons were closed down, those people had very good hair.
Yeah, I've noticed that with a number of politicians on their Zoom meetings. It looked during this pandemic like they certainly were seeing their hairdresser. I found that so interesting. Mayor Bill de Blasio went from threatening, you mentioned this in your piece, from threatening the Orthodox Jewish community for holding a funeral to appearing without a mask at an anti-police rally, even as much of New York City is still shut down. How is de Blasio getting by with this double standard, this double speak, Daniel Greenfield?
Well, the bottom line is this is something we're seeing really in the, again, with a lot of these blue state governors, with a lot of blue state mayors, where the same people who were very forcefully shutting down reopen protests, who were shutting down churches and synagogues. For example, California just issued a ban on people singing in churches and synagogues, yet at the same time there are no restrictions on rallies and protests because once the Black Lives Matter rallies began, they were on board. And we see, again, some of the same politicians, including Governor Newsom out in California, Bill de Blasio in New York, Governor Whitmer, who were telling everybody to wear masks, appearing without masks at these Black Lives Matter rallies and without social distancing. They're marching, in many cases, very closely together with other people. So there are these ridiculous double standards. We have the now a torrent of attacks on people going to the beach because, you know, if you're sitting 20 feet away from somebody on the beach, it's somehow more dangerous than gathering into huge clumps of thousands of people and going out and marching. And, for example, you've got the guy who was showing up in the news, the Florida lawyer who was dressing up as the Grim Reaper and going to beaches and warning people off. And this is the same guy who's been attending Black Lives Matter rallies. So there is a huge double standard in this regard, and it's arguably a very illegal double standard because laws should apply equally to everybody. There should not be fundamental differences in how laws apply if you're a prominent politician or if you're on the right side of a political cause.
Well, what it looks like to me, Daniel, is that, in fact, it's probably not a true narrative. If, in fact, there were all these concerns about the coronavirus and to create all these lockdowns, then it seems like that they'd be concerned about their own well-being as they were, you know, locking hands at these different protests or locking arms at these different protests. So what it means to me is, as I look at this, is that it's probably not true, because if it was true, they, I don't think, would be doing what they're doing. What's your thoughts, Daniel?
I think truth for people who are very much ideologues who are on the left varies with whatever their political agenda is at any given moment. When their agenda is wrecking the economy by having a lockdown, because they believe in an absolute truth. They talk a lot about science, but they deny objectivity. So the truth for them is whatever serves their political interest at any moment, and they absolutely believe it in that moment, and then the next moment they believe something else.
Oh, that's interesting, because I thought it was more hypocritical, but you're saying that their truth moves around, that they, in their minds, are they're not being hypocritical, that in fact it's true for this moment, but it's a different truth for a different moment. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah, this is the My Truth era. The New York Times did a piece on some of the epidemiologists who are going to Black Lives Matter rallies, and they all basically say, well, we're grappling with a contradiction there, which basically admits, well, there is a contradiction, but we can't really properly frame it, because for them there's a huge moral priority with their politics, and their politics trumps everything else. And those are the scientists. The people who aren't scientists, they just shift on a dime with whatever the media is telling them, with whatever they're seeing on social media at any given moment. When what they're seeing on social media is that people who are leaving the house are terrible people, they're denouncing people without masks. When social media and the media are telling them that the big priority is that Black people are being killed by the police every 4 seconds, then that's going to be their priority. It's all about politics.
Well, this makes it really difficult for everyday people. I know I have a number of friends that have immunity issues, and they are... they're scared to death by what they see on the mainstream media all the time. I think deep down they may think that, oh, this may not be true. And as we look at, you know, the actual actions of these politicians, it seems to me that the narrative of scaring people to death is it's almost cruel. And I think people are questioning it in some ways, but yet they're so concerned because that's all they hear, that they're buying into this mainstream media thing. What do you think, Daniel?
I was actually talking to a medical friend of mine yesterday, and he said that the media is absolutely the worst place to get information about the pandemic. It's absolutely unscientific. It pushes a particular narrative at any given time, and it's one of the reasons we made so many bad decisions and so many people died. Because instead of actually securing people who were in nursing homes, the most vulnerable people, securing people who actually have immunity issues, those are the people, for example, in the flu pandemic, who are the most at risk, instead of doing that, we focused very much on shutting down everything and overreactions. We don't actually have a sane middle ground response to anything, and the media amplifies everything. It creates paranoia, it creates fear. Early on, during the impeachment, when the media was very much pushing the impeachment narrative, there people began noticing that viewers, readers were consuming more stories about the coronavirus, and they realized, well, this is a potential boom for us. People are not really that interested in impeachment because impeachment really was had an inevitable outcome, but the coronavirus was a potential thing, and the media fastened on it. And they've been generating misinformation, disinformation, that's driving us to adopt very bad policies, policies that have wrecked our economy, terrorized people, and, yes, gotten people killed.
So what can we do about this, Daniel Greenfield?
Well, for one thing, listen much less to the media. The problem really is the media is kind of like a drug dealer. Its goal is to get people addicted, get them hooked, and just constantly tune in. So they create a crisis, and then something in your kitchen can kill you, film at 11. It's that kind of thing, and it's the coronavirus is that kind of thing taken to the nth degree. And the problem is a lot of politicians really are listening to the media. They're getting the cues from media. President Trump is unique in some ways in that he really does not follow the media narratives, or at least he listens to Fox News, for example. Really, most of Washington, D.C., a lot of local politicians are tuning in to CNN. They're reading the New York Times. They're getting their marching orders that way, and that's not how society should run. I mean, even if reporters were not particularly biased, even if journalists didn't have an agenda, they're not the people we should be listening to. And when you constantly tune into this kind of fear porn that they put out on a daily, hourly, by the minute basis, you're just gonna it's just gonna drive you crazy.
Well, and then but we also then see this narrative is being used to continue to, I think, tap down on our freedoms. I'm continuing to see additional municipalities here in Colorado that are passing a mandatory mask mandates, I guess would be the word. And so this narrative, they're continuing to use this to you know, I think really tap down on our freedoms, Daniel.
It is. It's very much is. We've seen the pandemic being used to justify effectively eliminating the First Amendment, which is almost unprecedented and extremely disturbing. We're continuing to see the claim that public health crisis effectively trumps everything. We're seeing courts even more troublingly back that up, which is a very, very disturbing phenomenon, especially now as other things can also be declared a public health crisis. I mean, we have multiple cities that have passed ordinances or resolutions that call racism a public health crisis. Obviously, there's a call to describe the environment as a public health crisis, which effectively means that every lefty political priority can become a public health crisis and basically individual freedom completely vanishes.
Well, and that is something that is concerning me, is kind of the weaponization of our local health departments against the American people. And so they've certainly used this narrative on the coronavirus to do that. But I hadn't really thought about these other things regarding racism as a public health crisis or climate change. So we could see these local health departments, the bureaucrats there. I mean, this may just be a taste of things to come, Daniel Greenfield. Why don't we, on that note, let's go to break, because I'd like to hear what you have to say about that. This is Kim Munson with The Kim Munson Show, and I'm talking with Daniel Greenfield. He is a writer for Front Page Magazine, its blog, The Point, and his own blog, The Sultan Knish. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. And we'd appreciate it if you would go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. We always have all kinds of important articles that we're and op-eds that we're publishing there. On the line with me is Daniel Greenfield. He is the Shulman Journalism Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He writes for Front Page Magazine, its blog, The Point, and his own blog, The Sultan Knish. And the piece that really got my attention, Daniel, was this piece that you had done of We're Not All in This Together. And what I've seen is really the weaponization of these local health departments, given these bureaucrats, they're unelected, they're unaccountable, enormous power over everyday people's lives, their livelihoods. And I'm concerned that this coronavirus, Wuhan virus reaction disruption could just be a precursor of things to come. You'd mentioned both that racism has been noted as a public health crisis, as well as climate change. So unpack that a bit for us, Daniel.
So the left largely gains power by describing a crisis, by claiming there's an urgent crisis, that we have to set aside all the norms, the Constitution, the usual processes to resolve. Now, the crisis keeps changing all the time. Before all this, of course, we have a major environmental protests, which now are not so much in the news, and you kind of noticed that. And then they went over to coronavirus. Now they switched over to the racism crisis. But there's always some grand epic crisis that the left has to be given extraordinary powers to transform our society to solve. And this goes back all the way to Karl Marx, to the idea that there's going to be this inevitable clash of class warfare. So the left derives power from describing this crisis. And right now, the coronavirus has very effectively shown that if you describe a public health crisis, if you terrorize people, if you get them to be very afraid, you can completely set aside all the traditional freedoms. So we lost the right of assembly, we lost freedom of speech, we lost freedom of religion during the coronavirus. And I think a lot of people understand what that means. For example, churches and synagogues were shut down. People who organized rallies were arrested. Actually, even promoting the rally was itself banned, for example, on Facebook. So we saw an unprecedented assault in the name of a public health crisis. Now we actually have quite a number of cities that actually came out and declared that racism is a public health crisis. Now, obviously, that's nonsense. I mean, but it really gets to the larger issue, which is that if you call something a public health crisis, the way that Indianapolis, the way that any number of organizations has, then you can actually go ahead and state that this crisis, dealing with this crisis, should set aside, the First Amendment should set aside really all the traditional rights. And it actually creates this illusion, this mythology that this is about science. They've done this obviously with the environment. They've taken their usual anti-capitalist agenda and cloaked it in both science and opposition to a so-called grave public health threat from pollution. And at this point, pollution just consists of carbon. That's the absurdity there, which they claim will destroy the planet. With racism, they're increasingly medicalizing that as well. They're giving it the illusion of science, and they can do this with any number of crises. If you apply the same logic that they're using for racism, for example, to poverty, to anything else that causes stress, because they're claiming that racism is a health crisis because it causes stress. Anything that causes stress then becomes a public health crisis, which means gives them extraordinary powers to effectively override all existing legal rights.
Well, and you mentioned a really interesting point of, you know, the First Amendment has really been, you know, walked all over during this coronavirus thing. And people many times will say, oh, okay, I'll give up a little of my freedom for some additional security. Of course, we've been warned by Benjamin Franklin on that ultimately that we'll have neither if we start down that road. But I remember back when the Patriot Act was first proposed after 9/11. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, this doesn't really seem constitutional to me. But okay, if it keeps us safe, okay. And I realized that we can't start to have these gray areas on the Constitution, because once you give an inch, we've now seen what happens. These politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties take a mile. And so we need to understand our Constitution, this vision of the Declaration, that all men are created equal with these unalienable rights from our Creator of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Those are the things that we need to be working towards instead of this divisiveness that is being used to really, I think, tear down our country, Daniel.
It very much is. I should just also mention, it's not just the First Amendment. It's also, for example, the Second Amendment. The American Medical Association called guns a public health crisis, which means really it can be used almost infinitely to strip us of all rights. And the left, as you mentioned, is very much divisive. Its whole purpose is to divide people, to manufacture a crisis, and then to divide the country into those who want urgent action and those who don't, and we should avoid falling for it.
Well, and so what can we, what do you think that we can do about this as everyday people?
Well, for starters, it means we need to actually be able to take a step back. When we see a story spreading around, we need to actually think about the long-term consequences. A lot of the bad decisions that were made, whether it's the coronavirus, whether it's the current race riots, were made because people really reacted in the moment. They listened to what they were being told, and they led with their emotions. as Benjamin Franklin said, America is a republic if we can keep it, which means we actually have to do due diligence. We have to not panic. We have to keep our we have to keep cool heads, and we have to be able to tell other people. We have to set a model with other people, not just necessarily by debating them, but by not actually panicking, because people really panic in groups. There's a herd instinct.
Right, and we don't get our best decisions made in groups. The mob mentality of democracy is why our founding fathers made America a constitutional republic. I wanted to go back to something in your piece that we're not all in this together, and that is the term, we're all in this together. You said it's a state of mindless and unquestioning conformity, and it is un-American. And I think in my gut, I knew that as I was starting to hear this, or I was driving down I-25, and I saw one of the signs over the highway that said, this was early on in the pandemic, stay home, save a life. So the opposite is if you're not staying home, you want to kill somebody. These are very dangerous narratives for people that love the American idea.
They are, and actually in the piece I traced back the origins of some of these slogans to China, to communist China. We really adopted a lot of their slogans. We just kind of reworded it. We made it more American. We ran it through Madison Avenue and advertising speak. But these are really the slogans of the Chinese Communist Party, which is very disturbing that these are now being mainstreamed in America, and they're being mainstreamed in many cases by corporations. And some of these corporations, by the way, have deep roots in China, which is something that is really not being addressed. For example, Coca-Cola, Nike, all the corporations that are making a show of being very interested in criticizing America over slavery, they're actually relying on slave labor in China. This is a bit of an aside, but it's also something that's important to remember.
I had not thought about that. That's a very interesting point. Let's talk just a little thoughts about that, Daniel Greenfield.
The goal is to attack the legitimacy of the United States. The left has been at it for a while. The 1619 Project is the bigger plan for doing it. Now, the interesting thing about the New York Times pushing the 1619 Project, before the 1619 Project, they had another project. That one was titled Red Century. It was really about rehabilitating communism, particularly Soviet communism. Right before they actually set out to undermine the legitimacy of America, they were propping up the legitimacy of communism. And I've actually got a recent article which notes that 1619 Project's claim that America was built on slave labor is very much a lie. On the other hand, the Soviet Union was built on slave labor. They had about 20 million people in the gulags, and that was just part of the equation. Those people lived much worse lives. They were subject to much harsher labors. For example, in the gulag, you had an atomic gulags where people would actually, prisoners, many of them political prisoners, would actually participate in mining uranium without protective clothing. These people would die often within 2 months. They would then actually, their bodies would then actually be used for medical experiments. And this did not go on in the 20s or the 30s or the 40s. This was happening in the 1970s at a time when top Democrats and leftists like Senator Bernie Sanders were reaching out to the Soviet Union and praising it. So the Soviet Union was built on slave labor. Socialist countries are always built on slave labor. If you look at China, if you look at Cuba, if you look at Cambodia, there are always slave labor camps. America was not built on slavery, but the socialist systems, including, for example, National Socialism, for that matter, are built on slave labor.
Well, and the American idea is so interesting that, you know, this vision in the Declaration that all men are created equal. The founders really tussled with that. They needed to come together so that they could fight Britain for our independence. But slavery was prevalent throughout the world for centuries. And as you mentioned, there's still slavery today. It seems like all those that are so concerned about slavery should be trying to eradicate it in these different countries that you mentioned. But the idea that within, 70, 80 years, this little country went to war to answer that question is something that should be celebrated instead of something that should be chastised. So we have just a couple of minutes. Daniel Greenfield, what would be the final thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, you're quite correct. Only about 3.6% of the slaves in the transatlantic slave trade went to America. The Latin American countries that the left loves, that's where actually most of the slaves went. Americans have absolutely nothing to feel ashamed in that regard. America had a brief period of slavery. Slavery has been an embodied condition in the world for thousands of years. We were the only ones who actually went to war to actively end it within our own borders. Nobody else would do that. We sacrificed hundreds of thousands of lives to do it in our deadliest war yet. We have a good deal to be proud of. And when we go on the defensive about our history, that is a huge mistake. We actually ought to be talking about what the history, what the culture heroes of the left, the people who are smashing the statues, who their heroes are, what those people did, and to hold them accountable for it.
Most definitely. So, Daniel Greenfield, thank you for this great conversation. How can people get more information about you?
Well, I am a Shulman Journalism Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center at frontpagemag.com. All my articles are available there, along with a lot of great work by other people, including David Horowitz.
Okay, fantastic. So, Daniel Greenfield, thank you so much. You have a great day.
Thank you.
And our quote for today is from Dean Alphonse. He said, "I will not trade freedom for beneficence, nor my dignity for a handout." So my friends, today, be grateful. Read great books. Think good thoughts. Listen to beautiful music. Communicate and listen well. Live honestly and authentically. Strive for high ideals. And like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell